if we can do Haggai here.
We won't get messages done either.
Well, yeah, we will. Yeah. It'll only take us 15, 20 minutes. And that way I need him to do his test. I'm hoping he comes back in.
All these pages, Haggai?
Yeah, but it's good. It's good. Don't worry.
Yeah, but I mean...
He's complaining.
Oh, I see. No, he's giving me too many cents. Oh, I get you.
Yeah.
I thought these were all for me. Yeah. Right. I catch you. All right. Look, I thought that
okay,
was the
thing. Okay, I got a pop quiz for you. How many issues do you want to take until she brings that in?
Oh, you guys are ridiculous.
We did. I had to do all of the tests. Please. First off, so that we could calmly work on each one of the lessons. So while we're doing Haggai, you can do that. We're just trying to get some extra work done.
Yeah.
Well, you ought to have a book that you can put them all into. All right, Haggai. I've titled this, Finish What You Start Out to Do. Are you with me? Did everybody get a Haggai page?
Yeah.
We'll put it next afterwards. It doesn't matter. Sorry about that.
I'll be confused.
It's sequencing is your problem before.
So I just helped you out.
Well, you didn't actually confuse me.
All right, Haggai tells us the author of the book is the prophet Haggai. It's written in, now circle this date, 520 is a very well-established date for this book. Some of the books are kind of hard to tell. This one's definitely easy to tell.
Well, it says here written in approximately 520.
I know. I say approximately, but it's pretty established, and I'll show you in just a little bit, okay? Purpose, he sought to challenge the people of God concerning their priorities. That is the big thing about Haggai. He called them to reverence and glorify God by building the temple in spite of local and official opposition. It's kind of like us when we, I sometimes figure, am I letting everything stop me from just buying a building and going forward with it? Haggai called them not to be discouraged because the temple would not be quite as richly decorated as Solomon's. Instead, he exhorted them to turn from the uncleanness of their ways and to trust in God's sovereign protective power. The book of Haggai is a reminder of the problems the people of God faced at that time and how the people courageously, they listened to Haggai, they believed Haggai, and they trusted in God as he provided for their needs. Now, look at down to the E, practical application. The book of Haggai draws attention to common problems most people face even today. Haggai asks us to examine our priorities to see if we are more interested in our own pleasures than doing the work of God. He asks whether we will reject a defeatist attitude when we run into opposition. And three, the book asks us to confess our failures and seek to live pure lives before God, to act courageously for God because we have the assurance that He is with us always and in full control of our circumstances. And five, the book challenges us to rest secure in God's hands, knowing that He will abundantly bless us as we faithfully serve Him. So, Zechariah, huh?
Sorry, no, just have thought.
Okay. Zechariah and Haggai they overlap each other. Haggai's messages were preached within a 15-week period from 29th of August through the 18th of December of 520. They've actually, it's that pinned down so well because of the reference to the second year and the fourth year of Darius. So in Haggai 1 says about the second year, the sixth month, the first day of the month. It's equivalent to the 29th of August, 520 BC. You've got each one of those dates run along. Now look, you've got Haggai 1:1, Haggai 1:15, Haggai 2:1. Zechariah 1:1 is in the eighth month of the second year. Haggai chapter 2 picks up in the ninth month. Zechariah 1:7 is in the 11th month of the second year. And Zechariah 7:1 is in the ninth month of the fourth year. So they overlap. Does everybody see that? You understand what's going on? Now, some historical settings for Haggai and Zechariah. First, there are three groups of people that come back to Israel and to Judah. It's called the first return of the Jews after the 7 year of Babylonian captivity. The first return from Babylonian exile was under Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel. That was back when Cyrus was king. This was probably when Haggai returned to Jerusalem, and that's when the temple was rebuilt. Now, the first temple was built by who?
Solomon.
This is now the second temple. And so Haggai and Zechariah prophesied the temple, and the temple was completed under, later on, Darius the First. Here you got Levitical sacrifices being reinstituted. The foundation of the temple was laid, but the Samaritan and Persian resistance ended the rebuilding of the temple for 16 years. That's your fill-in.
Sixteen.
And then Haggai and Zechariah prophesy, encouraging the nation to rebuild the temple. And finally it gets built and completed in 515 B.C. So a little opposition stopped them for how many years?
16.
Wow, how long will the devil be able to stop you? It bothers me how much the devil is able to hinder us. Then the second return, a second wave of people returning. The second return happens under Ezra. Ezra goes back and gets more people from Darius and Artaxerxes. And Ezra and Nehemiah are around at the same time, according to Nehemiah 8:2, Ezra's preaching. Then you have the third wave of a return. And that's when Nehemiah goes back to Babylon and brings a huge group of people. Now, let's look at Haggai. Chapter 1, I've called it Get Back to Work, all right? And let's read it there, just the entire chapter. In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, he's the one in charge, and to Joshua, the son of Josedek, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, This people say, The time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Well, then came the word of the Lord by Haggai, the prophet, saying, Well, if it's not time to build the house of the Lord, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed or roofed houses, and this house lie waste? You see the argument going on? You say it's not time to finish the house of the Lord, but you think it's great to finish your own house?
Just a little note, that sealed house, is that like ceiling house?
Yeah, sealed or roofed, yeah. Yes. Ceiling. Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Take a good look at what you're doing. Ye have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there's none warm, Barry. And he that earneth wages to put into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. The idea in verse 8 is, you seek your own pleasure. You seek your own glory. Why don't you seek my pleasure and my glory? Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts? Because of mine house that is waste. And ye run every man to his own house. Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Josedek, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, circle that word, they obeyed. That's so rare. When a prophet would preach, how did the people normally respond?
Disobeyed.
With stones, or with just outright disobedience. But they obeyed the voice of the Lord their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God had sent him. And the people did fear before the Lord. Then spake Haggai the Lord's messenger in the Lord's temple. I'm sorry, in the Lord's message, unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. So when I'm preaching, have you ever heard me say, my message today is? Or you've heard somebody say, I have a message from the Lord. Well, that came from this. This is the message of the Lord from Haggai. I am with you, saith the Lord. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Josedek, the high priest. And he stirred up the spirit of the remnant of the people, and they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God, in the 24th day of the 6th month, in the 2nd year of Darius the king. So, he rebukes first Judah and his leaders, and he says, it's time to finish the temple. The words that you've got to fill in there is the priority. The people had moved back to Judah and even to Jerusalem from their captivity, and they'd built their own homes and it settled in. And they had even started to build the temple, but they quit due to pressures. A lot of people come to church, and then a little trouble comes along, and what do?
Go home.
They go home. They quit. They instead go shopping on Sundays. They do everything to build their home and their family, and they neglect God's house. So, for 16 years, the temple was laying waste, and it was a mockery to God, while their own homes shone with polish. The people had wrong priorities. You know what the priority is? Worship is the priority. Not your home, not your family, not even your health. You better walk with God. Without the temple, these people were no better than the heathen. They were just as self-centered as a heathen, unsaved, ungodly man. So he asks them, he says, consider your ways. Look at the fruit of your own ways. You have less and less for all your efforts, don't you? And look at all the problems in your life. All because you have ignored finishing God's house. So here I've created a proper priority list from this portion of Scripture. Number one, return to the will of God. And they already did that. They came back to the promised land, didn't they? Alright, so the first priority you ought to be is to return to the will of God. If you've gotten out of the will of God, get back in the will of God. Number two, build the temple first. Develop your worship. It's funny. We have all the mechanisms, all of the instruments, all of the tools, but the most important thing is just to walk with God. To walk with him, to worship him. Build the temple first, then Nehemiah says, then you can build the walls. And then the last thing you do is you're supposed to build your homes.
So was Nehemiah after this?
Mm-hmm. Ezra came, built the temple. Then, and it took 20 years. And then Nehemiah came and built the walls. But what had been first? What had the people done when they came back to Jerusalem? They
built their own homes.
They barely built the house of the Lord, and it took Nehemiah. He looked around and he says, the temple's here, but there are no walls. How come you haven't built the walls? And he took it upon himself to build the walls because he knew that was a priority. So those are the four priorities. Get back in the will of God, build your walk with God, build up walls. What would be a good comparison, illustration of walls? Boundaries or
protection for
separation. Build lines that you don't cross and nobody crosses.
Threshold.
There's that threshold again. All right. Didn't it need, I told you, Nehemiah, I'm sorry, Haggai was very practical. Now there's a humble agreement. I mean, they go, wow, we're in for this. All the remnant was stood up for good. It took 24 days, though, of preaching to convince them. It tells you what day he started to preach, and then what day when they finally said, okay. So it's kind of funny. I think I preach, and I go, how come nobody's listening? Sometimes it takes 24 days of preaching. Here comes the second message, in chapter 2, verse 9. In the 7th month, in the 1 20th day of the month, came the word of the Lord by the prophet Haggai, saying, speak now to... chapter 2.
Oh, sorry, wait a second. Go ahead.
Sorry, did I say wrong?
No, I
okay.
I both.
All right. Sorry. In the 7th month, in the 1 20th day of the month, came the word of the Lord by the prophet Haggai, saying, speak now to Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Josedek, the high priest, and to the residue of the people. Now, one note, sometimes I think of these things and I don't write them down, but why does he always put all of these people, the son of, the son of, the son of? Why would he say that?
Maybe to indicate who he is, the line?
It does identify who you are. I mean, I'm Craig Ledbetter. I'm in the Ledbetter family. And so this is saying, this is the Zerubbabel of the Shealtiel family.
But it also, another side on is that it allows us to identify dates. And
exactly,
times.
And lineage, so that people could say, I'm of that family and stuff.
What's this? 1986 Olympics.
Look at you!
But I also, I mean, for today, because you're able to identify that it was the fact,
yes, so oh, everything,
today,
yes.
To be able to look back, all those.
So people get discouraged by all the names, but you need the names, okay?
And a name actually means something, so if you look what they mean.
Oh, good, amen, excellent. So he goes on, and he says, to the residue of the people, verse 3, saying, who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord, and be strong, O Joshua, son of Josedech, the high priest, and be strong, all ye people of the land, saith the Lord, and work, for I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts. According to the word that I coveted with you when ye came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house, this new house, with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. Hey, the silver is mine, and the gold already is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. I don't need that to make it glorious. The glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. This is amazing, because the more you learn about this stuff, the more it blows you away. Here, this is a month later, and the people are asked to compare the second house with Solomon's temple. And he says, it looks nothing like the first one, does it? Those of you who remember it, you know that it doesn't look like it. It looks very disappointing, doesn't it? So, but God says, be encouraged, because God says, I am with you. There was a battle where the Philistines gathered against Israel, and the Israelites were so far away from God in the book of Judges, they went into the temple, or in the tabernacle at that point. What did they grab and take out to the fight? They took the ark. They took it out there thinking that the ark would guarantee them a win. And the ark was taken, and Israel was defeated. God said, the ark is not what you need. The temple is not what you need. I am what you need. You need me there. Where two or three are gathered together, if I'm there, it's glorious. If 2,000 or 3,000 are there and I'm not there, it's dead. Okay. I am with you. And that's what really matters. So we need to get to doing God's will. And God is with you because you're actually with God again. So here's God going this way. And I'm going that way. No matter how hard I try, I will never succeed. I'll never have joy. So when it says God is with me, does God come over to me and start going with me?
No.
He says, when I repent and I start drawing nigh to God and doing what I'm supposed to be doing all along, all of a sudden God's with me. Not that God joined me, but I'm now with God. But it looks like God is with me now, doesn't it? It's kind of a neat way. So God's just saying, I'm keeping my promises, my covenant promises, so don't fear. Number 4, look at verse 6. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth. In the sea and the dry land I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. The silver is mine, the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. The glory of this latter house shall be greater. And in this place will I give peace. So number 4, look ahead, not back. A lot of people live in depression because they look back and imagine what they've lost.
What is 3A? God says,
I am with you. Number 4, look ahead. Don't only look back and imagine what you've lost, but look ahead and expect the God who accomplished so much in the past, expect him to do the same, if not greater, in the future. there is a great humbling coming where God says he will shake heaven, earth, the sea, and the dry land. Has that happened yet? I'm talking about on a worldwide scale. So that's referring to the tribulation, isn't it? Okay. And I will shake all nations. And then D, the Messiah will come. He's called the desire of all nations. That's Malachi chapter 4 as well. He is, whether they know it or not, he is the desire of all nations. He is the one world ruler that can bring forth peace. God will fill this house with his glory. You know, it's amazing. There's a smaller house than Solomon's temple. God says, this is going to be glorious. The idea is God doesn't need anything of ours to make this house stunning. We'll, you know, when we get our building, we'll try to do it up nice, but money's not going to make it. Gold, silver, garnishings aren't going to make it a house that's worthy of you know, honor. God's presence will. So this second temple will actually be more glorious than the first. How is that possible? Well, number H, it is through this, I keep emphasizing this second house, this new temple, that God will bring peace. Now I want you to see the Messiah will come to this temple. Malachi says, the Lord shall suddenly come to his temple. He will accomplish peace. Evidently, it's a reference to him being the sacrifice that brings peace between God and men. This will be the only temple before the millennium. So here's a linear sequence for you, Eric, to confuse. Point one, you have the building of Solomon's temple. All right? Everybody look up here at me for a second. You have Solomon's temple. The only next temple before the millennium is the temple that's built in Ezra's day. That's the next temple. Now, the temple that Jesus walks around in, what temple is that?
Herod's temple.
Yeah, we call it Herod's temple. But did you know it is Ezra's temple that has just been expanded by Herod? Mm-hmm. Herod didn't build another temple. Mm-hmm. He just expanded it. So you still are at the second temple. Now there's a third temple coming.
The rebuilding.
Yeah, the Jews are going to try and rebuild the temple. Guess what? That temple's not accepted by God, and it will be destroyed because the Antichrist will put himself up in there. That temple doesn't count. There is a third temple, which is actually the fourth, if you want to count them. But God calls it the third temple. There is one more temple coming out in the future, built in the millennium, and that is the temple on the earth in Jerusalem. And it's described in Ezekiel chapter 40 to 48. Nine chapters of mundane, monotonous architectural description of chambers and lights and walls. It's all describing a temple that's built in a millennium.
Why didn't these guys try and copy that?
Ezekiel was writing about something out in the future. They knew that the chapter 38, 39 prophecies had to take place before the temple. And the resurrection of the nation of Israel was not on the cards. Even though they had returned, it was not considered a resurrection. They knew chapter 38 talked about the bones being resurrected and things. They knew that that was still something out in the future. Actually, it's still to this very day, every Jewish priest scratches their head at why God describes another temple. When they've already given up on the temple, the Jews have decided that God does not need sacrifices. All he wants is a sacrifice of a broken, a contrite spirit. That's all he wants. That's what they've determined. A man asked Ken Ham was had a guy at a Jewish meeting talking about prophecy, stuff like that. And this, I don't know, one of his guys asked him, said, sir, you're talking about the Day of Atonement. It was a big celebration of the Day of Atonement. And he said, you're talking about the Day of Atonement, but how can you atone for sin without the blood? How can you atone? And the rabbis, without even batting an eye, he says, what is sin? Mm-hmm. As if, you know, we're not really atoning for anything. We're just going through a feast. It's a celebration. What is sin? We don't even know what sin is anymore. That's how far rabbis have gotten away from the Bible. When they start to look at the Bible and they find out that they've lost their religious system, they've lost their temple, they've lost their priesthood, they can't even identify who a priest is, they go, who's to say what sin is anymore?
It's philosophical, really.
It's all philosophy. Most of the worst when I say this, but most of the worst psychologists in the world are Jews. Their philosophy on life is some of the most depraved because they've abandoned the Bible.
Was that a liberal rabbi or was that...
As far as I can tell, he was a liberal, yes. But it was a big name thing, and it was a huge celebration of the Day of Atonement. It was just such a proper thing. He says, how can you atone for sin without blood? And he says, what is sin? Next question.
Sure, they can't have any of the feasts without sacrifices.
That's right. There was no worship without sacrifice. Mm. So, number C, here's the third and the last message, chapter 2 and verse 10. In the 24th day of the 9th month, in the second year of Darius, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, ask now the priest concerning the law, saying, if you carry holy flesh in the skirt of his garments, holy flesh meaning meat from a lamb or something that's been dedicated, and with that same skirt, accidentally touches bread or pottage or wine or oil or any meat, shall those things be holy? And the priest answers and says, no. Just because you're carrying holy flesh, it doesn't make something else holy. Verse 13, then said Haggai, well, if one that is unclean by touching a dead body, if he touch any of these things, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, yes, it shall be unclean. So, if I'm carrying holy things, I can't make things clean or holy. But if I'm carrying something that is unholy or unclean, is diseased, I can pass genes. You can't pass holiness, but you can pass genes. All right, germs. You can't. I've still a lot of pain. You can't pass holiness, but you can pass germs. And he said, it shall be unclean. Then answered Haggai and said, well, so is this people. And so is this nation before me, saith the Lord. And so is every work of their hands. And that which they offer there is unclean. Why? Why was their efforts unclean?
Because they were unclean themselves.
Yes. And that's going to be a very important thing. The further we go in our Christian walk, we've got to gauge and go, am I staying right with God? Because I can't. You know, I can't transfer holiness to somebody else, but I can transfer sin. I can be so self-righteous and proud, I can affect other people and make them self-righteous and proud. Okay? So, verse 15, and now I pray you, consider from this day and upward, that before a stone was laid upon a stone in the temple of the Lord, since those days were, when one came to a heap of 20 measures, back then, there were but 10. When one came to the press fat for to draw out 50 vessels or 50 liters out of the press, you only got 20. Well, back then I smote you with blasting and with mildew and with hail in all the labors of your hands. Yet ye turned not to me, saith the Lord. So consider now from this day and upward. Remember what it was like before where I was against you. Well, from this day upward, upon the 24th day of the 9th month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Is the seed yet in the barn? Yea, as yet the vine and the fig tree and the pomegranate and the olive tree hath not brought forth yet. From this day will I bless you. Why? Because they were doing right. They finally were getting back to rebuilding the temple. Their hearts were right. Notice what happened back there in chapter 1 where it says they obeyed the voice. Now everything they do will be blessed. And I will bless you. Verse 20. And again the word, let's just do the third message. I said there's two more. God comforts the rebuilding of the temple. He asks the priest about holding down cleanness. Because without the temple being finished, what the people were offering by way of worship was unclean. It was hypocrisy. And so their efforts were cursed. But number four, but now consider and observe how their efforts would be blessed. If only they started sowing their seed again. He asks, is there any seed left in the barn? Go get it and start planting it, because now I will bless it. Here's the fourth message, verse 20. And again the word of the Lord came unto Haggai in the 24th day of the month, saying, speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and horses and their riders shall come down, and every one of the sword by the sword of his brother. In that day, saith the Lord of hosts, I wonder which day that will be, the day of the Lord, in that day, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and I will make thee as a signet, as a sign ring, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. Verse 23 is talking about the day of the Lord. What is God going to do to Zerubbabel? He names him. He says he's the son of Shealtiel. He's going to resurrect him. He says, I will bring you back. Just like he will bring back King David and everything. So the promise to Zerubbabel, he said, he makes five promises. I will shake the heavens and the earth. I'll overthrow the throne of all kingdoms. I will destroy the strength of all the kingdoms of the heathen. I will overthrow their chariots and those that ride in them. The horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. And I'll make thee as a signet. That's a resurrection promise to Zerubbabel, and he will live again in the millennium. And Zerubbabel is a type of the coming Messiah who will rule Jerusalem and Judea in the future. Zerubbabel, just like David, is a type of Jesus.
So when he says they walk the chariots and the riders and swords, is that to do with in the tribulation people want to have electricity or something?
It's possible. I've read it that way, that it said that they'll burn their weapons, and the idea is that probably you'll go back to a lot of bows and arrows and what are those things that you cock back and they look like a gun but it fires an arrow? What are those things called?
Crossbows.
In the end of World War II, Japan had no more metal, they had no more factories, so they were building airplanes out of wood. And it just had a huge container of petrol in the back, and they were just kamikaze bombs, dropping bombs on the ships out in the sea. They were building the airplanes out of wood. The only thing that was metal was the propeller. Those poor guys were getting inside of a coffin.
And the engine.
The engine, yeah, sorry. But they had no machine guns, they had nothing. They were just flying out to die. But that was because they had used up all of their resources. Okay, Haggai. That was a good study. You survived. Wasn't it worth it?
I know. I like that one. Actually.
Good.
Worth it.
Amen. All right. We will take a two-minute break and then get into 30 minutes, 40 minutes of missions.